This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello and thanks very much for downloading the Scotland Outdoors Podcast. This is by way of a Boxing Day special edition recorded not in the BBC car park but by a river round a bonfire in Aberdeenshire. There's me, Mark Stephen, joined as always by Ewan McElraith and, on this occasion, Helen Needham.
Helen, this is your patch essentially, isn't it? This is your fire pit.
Yes, I thought it would be nice to host you here in a socially distant outdoor setting that we could enjoy actually having a fire together and create a bit of festive cheer.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're sitting in front of a really beautiful fire. The firewood is just turned to perfection. And the microphone cables, which are long because of social distancing, are melting in the heat. It's basically the size of a small bungalow, your bonfire.
Yeah, we like to do them big.
Yeah, you like big bonfires.
Yeah, statement bonfires. But it's going down a bit, and in a wee while we'll get some cooking on. We'll get some things on the fire and eat some treats.
Treats.
Yes.
Treats. Oh, I like the sound of treats. We've always had a bit of a fascination, not just with treats on this programme, but with Scandinavia, and in particular, Norway. Recently, we've heard about hutting culture there, and a couple of weeks ago, we learnt a brand new word, friluftsliv. More on that very soon. In the year when we've been encouraged to spend more time socialing outdoors than ever before, we thought we'd have our festive celebration outside too, round a fire, just to reminisce about the past 12 months.
Yeah, it's just been fantastic. The darkness is falling, the fire's just dying down, and it's a proper fire. It's about 7-8 feet across, and it just changes the whole atmosphere of the place. We've got three Swedish candles that we have high hopes for. You've tried to do this before. You can explain what it is. The last time you did it, it took 2 hours to get going.
That is a lie. That is an absolute lie.
It's just slight exaggeration.
And you've never been guilty of that in the past, have you? No. The Swedish candle is basically a dried log, and then you use a chain. If you put it on its end, so it's standing upright like a candle, use a chainsaw and basically just cut it into quadrants and then divide it again with a chainsaw. So you've got lots of gaps through it, and theoretically you should be able to drop a burning ember down the middle of it, and it burns from the inside out.
But it was such a clever thing, invented originally by the Swedish army and adopted by the Norwegians, so that they wouldn't have to have stoves. They would just take a chainsaw or a saw, cut a chunk of wood in the forest, because it doesn't have to be bone dry. Once you get it going, that jet of air keeps it going. The tricky bit is getting it going into the forest, get yourself a stove, and away you go.
This is just typical of you. You know, and I should be cutting you some leeway, because it is Christmas after all, but you are conflating two things, the Swedish candle and the jet log.
No, Swedish candle.
Totally different things.
Swedish candle and the jet log are two physically different things, but the Swedish candle was invented, and it's the same principle, the air comes in at the bottom and gets sucked out by the vacuum created by the heat as it rises from the top. Ergo, same things, different design.
Anyway, we are going to try and embrace the Norwegian art of friluftsliv. We touched on it a few programmes ago, but just to remind us what it meant and what the implications are for this time of year, we chatted again to a lovely lady, Siri Melland, from Norsk Friluftsliv.
Friluftsliv, it's a lot of variation of activities in nature. You can walk, you can bicycle, you can sail, hunt, berry picking, and you can even go cross-country skiing or snowshoeing or take a bath or go skating. But the terms friluftsliv is connected to not a specific activity. It's, if you can directly translate it into English, it's three words. It's free air life. And for Norwegians, this friluftsliv has a deeper meaning of about disconnecting from daily stress, so being a part of a bigger cultural we. So It brings us together as a nation. It's an important part of our culture. Long, long ago, it was Ibsen who actually, the famous writer, who actually bring out friluftsliv as a word in 1858 in a poem he wrote.
Well, Mark and I are both really excited at this concept, but is there stuff we can do in Scotland that we can embrace over Christmas? Is there a Christmas angle on it?
Yeah. And now under COVID-19, as we all are affected of, I think the outdoor activity is going to be even more important during the celebration this year. And I think we can just do it so simple. We need to have some light, make a bonfire, or invite some friends out for a walk. Just embrace it. Take good clothing, wool, as I told you before, and get out to, yes, it's wool. But it's all about to be dry and warm, to enjoy the outdoors.
See, dry and warm, this is the key point. I can do it in cold, I can do it in dry. The problem I have is, what if it is just teeming with rain, you know, at the time, and you're trying to have a bonfire? I mean, folk are going to be miserable, surely.
Yeah, but then you have to have we call it a tarp. You put it between the trees and you have dry, so you can be dry under. The bonfire can be outside, but you need to be dry. I have a reindeer skin I always bring out because then my butt is warm. And then I
see vool everywhere else, but reindeer skin for the butt. That's important to know. Siri Milland from Norsk Friluftsliv there, and we'll have more from Siri throughout the programme.
Reindeer skins, that's what we're missing today.
Your mum breeds red deer.
I know.
Is it the same?
I'm not sure.
We could find out.
Yes.
She'll never miss one.
Not today, maybe. But
the reindeer skin, it would be the perfect accessory for this, because the fire is lovely and warm, but you know, it's quite a warm night anyway, but usually you get that frozen stuff. The back is freezing cold and the front's toasty hot.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Just to drape over the benches, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Anyway, at the end of March this year, goes without saying, life changed dramatically for all of us. From then on, up and down the country, we found ourselves in a lockdown situation because of COVID-19. And to this day, we're still in some form of lockdown of one kind or another.
Yeah, it changed the way we make the programme. You can't go and see guests face to face anymore. But despite that, we hope you've been able to see what we can bring you with a bit of ingenuity. And to be perfectly honest, we've surprised ourselves and had a bit of fun.
True.
At the start of lockdown, we couldn't really travel in the same way that we normally do to gather all the material. So actually we thought of the idea of asking friends of the programme to record their daily exercises for us, which would then give different voices and different perspectives and different parts of the world.
Dan Holland took up the challenge. Dan lives in the northwest of Scotland and he recorded this back in April.
It's just a couple of days since the clocks went forward into British summertime, and that extra hour of daylight that suddenly you get, I find it just brings me an extra boost of life. As the evenings start getting longer and longer, and when you're lucky enough to live in the Northwest Highlands, very quickly you can see the daylight just swallowing the dark. And I think this year, more than any year I can remember in my life, that extra hour of daylight feels even more precious, even more valuable, even more welcome. I've found that in the past week or so, my walk has changed. What I'm looking at is changing. What I'm thinking is changing. What I'm feeling is changing. And how I'm appreciating where I walk has become so much richer. This is my local walk. We just call it the Ullapool Hill Path. But if you've been to Ullapool and you're standing in the village and you look up to the hill line behind you with the sea to your back, you'll see two telephone masts up on the hill. And I've just left those two telephone masts behind, and we're just walking at the moment just along a normal stony footpath, and we're going to follow the hill line around until we're overlooking the village, looking out into the Minch. And for me, where we're going to get to is, it's the most special place in the world. This early part of the walk, we're going through a plantation. At the right time of year, you'll often find the odd deer that's escaped off the hill and managed to get through the fence. One of the things I love, though, is the needles in the pine trees are just coming out of their buds. And so they are absolutely rich, vibrant green. Imagine Shrek with a bit of a highlighter pen. Well, they're like that. And they're piney, millimetres. And they're just bursting out of these little buds, like bright green fireworks exploding off the little branches and twiglets on the tree. We've just come to the edge of the plantation now. We'll go through the deer fence and we'll go up onto the top of the hill. Might get a bit windier. The loch's behind me at the minute and the village is out of sight. Someone just walking down the path towards me. Hi there. It's really interesting meeting people on a footpath. This is a narrow footpath. It's maybe a metre wide. But what do you do when you meet someone on a footpath and you're meant to be socially isolating? Do you stop? How far off the footpath do you go? And there was word in the village that maybe we should all get together and agree that the Ullapool Hill Path should become a one-way system. Then you don't get that awkward moment of who's going to step aside. I've got quite a long commute I do every day and I don't have to do that anymore. So now I've got hours more time in my day. And so I love walking up here. And what I've found is I'm walking slower. I'm enjoying that slowed down pace a lot more. I stop at the burn and I listen to the water trickling. I don't know if you can hear it over the wind. It's just a tiny burn. In the middle of the winter, though, it can be a big torrent and we get gales and heavy rain and snow melt. But now I listen to that trickle and I love the sound of it, of its monotony, of its crispness, of its consistency. One of the things that has really struck me over the past few weeks is the world is changing so much around us. Weekly, daily, in some cases, hourly. And yet when you can get outside, go for your favourite walk, explore the environment around you, then these are the constants. And they're carrying on as normal. I can just start to see below me, over the curve of the hill, the point of Ullapool, where the campsite juts out into the sea, where the ferry turns its last corner before she comes into berth. I'm just going to go and sit this viewpoint, which is just a little bundle of rocks, and it's a beautiful vista. I'm so lucky to be able to come and sit here, because further round to my right, I can see Benmore Coigach. Looking out of the loch to the west, I can see the Summer Isles. On a clear day, you can see Lewis, Harris, and the sunsets you see from this point are simply breathtaking. But what I find really interesting is looking down into Ullapool itself. That wind is the constant, but the village is empty. There's no cars parked there. The local fishing boats are all tied up. There's nobody walking along the streets. It's really quite eerie to look down at it. But for me, it's still the place I love to come to because it's a constant. I can come here and I can remember the times when I look down here and it is busy and it's bustling and it wasn't as windy. I can sit here and remember the time that I got engaged at this very spot. That's why it's so special. That's why I love this place. So there you are. This is my local walk. It's my favourite walk. It's a beautiful walk that takes you on, and we can carry on round. We can drop down into the village, and on a good day, when we can all get out and about and walk around, drop down and go and have a pint on the seawall, and then follow that circular route all the way back up home again.
That was Dan Holland with his walk overlooking Ullapool. A beautiful place, Ullapool. I've never been up that hill straight behind it. You know, just off to one side. Although apparently, I think, is there not a hill racer there every year?
There's a hill race. It's a lovely wee walk. It's about 30 minutes, 40 minutes off the top of my head. And you get up there and you have a beautiful view of Ullapool. Mm-hmm. But I love some of the things that Dan brought up. That dancing on the path. You know, do go right, do go left.
Yeah. No, it's a fact, actually. You know, we had to learn and adapt to so many things along those lines, you know. And you know, what was the protocol for all sorts of things? And it applied in the supermarket queue, but it equally applied outside in the outdoors too.
Yeah, it feels like that's a long time ago now, actually, thinking about that. That the awkward moments in the outdoors don't seem to be happening to the same extent. Well, not in my experience, anyway.
There's that whole thing about meeting people. You got over that awkward... I want to shake your hands, and then there was that odd elbow bumping thing.
I never got into that.
But now if you look at a film, I was looking at a film, a Norwegian police drama, and it was obviously made a couple of years ago, and they're all shaking hands and hugging every time you meet, and you go, whoa, what? That's not right. The children playing over there in the trees, the dog going in the water.
Yeah. Dog's
it's a lovely gloaming, isn't it, tonight?
It is, Gloria. We're really lucky because the past few days... the weather's actually been pretty mince.
It's been dreadful. It's just been dark and horrible. Actually, because we're recording this in the run-up to Christmas, so pre-solstice, the darkest possible time of the year and the worst possible weather that we've had here in the northeast. And it's been really difficult. But actually having a fire now and being out here and seeing a bit of sky is really uplifting.
When we spoke to Sarah, she was talking about, you know, says, oh, you can use a, you know, because I said to her, what do you do if it's raining? She says, oh, we use a tarp. I'm just not entirely certain, you know, in a situation like this, where you would put a tarp. You know, you'd probably have to build the fire slightly closer to a couple of trees or something so you could sling the tarp between the trees.
Well, we have had a tarp here on quite a lot of occasions,
really?
Actually. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a big hammock lying over there. You could just put a tarp on that and get under it.
Yeah, and there's poles you'll see around the back of you that we've strung up tarps and so on.
We heard from Dan Holland there. We've got more walks from around the country coming up in this programme, so stay tuned to hear from Nicola Meehan and her husband John as they take us in a walk up Abbey Craig. Plus... Ewan takes us on a bike ride.
And a fantastic piece of radio journalism as it is, too.
It was.
You wait with bated breath. Remember, we're not live today. You can always email us, outofdoors@bbc.co.uk, and we hope you're having a restful, gentle Boxing Day.
Actually, truth to be told, if you get any sense, you're probably still tucked up underneath a duvet at the moment, recovering after the excesses of Christmas Day.
Or you might be planning your Boxing Day walk.
Or your Boxing Day swim.
And listening to us on BBC Sounds with your waterproof headphones.
We've not one, but two Norwegian guests on the programme today. Kirsti Dinnes has been living in Edinburgh for a number of years now, and she's vice chair of the Norwegian Scottish Association. We asked Kirsti just to give us an insight into Christmas celebrations in Norway, because Christmas Day itself is not the important one. For Norwegians, Christmas Eve is the biggie.
Well, I've not been to Norway at Christmas for quite a while, but I have checked with my brother and things are just as usual, except for the virus. So we really prepare very early. And they have actually a horse and cart that takes all the children round before Christmas. And Julenissen, he is a kind of Santa, has little presents for these children. And my brother said it's about 200 of them going around on the, with this horse and the decorated cart. In my family, we used to have a little present on in the morning, a stocking, which wasn't usual, but with just a bit of mandarin oranges or fruits or anything. I think it was to stagger us because the presents would all be under the tree and everything would be all ready. And It also started really about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But before that, we used to go to my family grave, and they're all beautifully decorated on Christmas. Lots of people do that, and they put candles and wreaths on the grave. The graveyard's all full of shimmering lights and things. And then, so usually people in Norway go to church on Christmas Eve. It's all very jolly with Christmas carols and things, and everybody goes, even if that might be the only time in the year they go to church. But on Christmas Eve, just about everybody have a trip to go to the church. Afterwards, you go back to the house, and you dance around the Christmas tree, sing Christmas carols, or about Santa, or Julenissen, he's called. And he sometimes comes visiting. So there is usually an older person in the family. My brother does it. He comes, well, he used to do it. His children are now a bit too big for it. But when they were little, one time my grandniece, when he came and he was going to go away, having handed out a few presents, and she held on to him and she said, "Wait, wait, you have to meet my grandpa." So she was all taken in.
Kirsty Dinister, Vice Chair of the Norwegian Scottish Association. That idea of picking up the kids and taking them round about, you know, horse and cart and what have you, it rang a bell with me. Years ago, on Hogmanay, we used to do that with a tractor and a bogie. And you'd go around all the various farms and visit your neighbours. You know, that way, because you only needed one designated driver.
Yes.
But it was a good way of just keeping the community together.
Tell you what, I remember, I used to work in Stavanger many years ago, and what I noticed wandering around at night is they didn't pull their curtains. You could see people, families, having their evening meal. Rather than excluding everybody, everybody was kind of part of the evening.
Yeah, well, that's
anyway, Kirsty's going to be back a wee while later telling us about some intriguing little folklore characters called Nissi. Totally up my street.
We've set up our festive, socially distanced camp on the banks of the River Dee. You probably can't hear the river close by, but it's going down like a train at the moment. It's been a lot of rain recently. And just as I'm looking at the river, because it is just at the gloaming at the moment, that Swedish candle, the log we were describing, is just about catching fire again. It's just occasional flicker of flame coming out the top of that.
It's off. It's going.
It's very exciting stuff, I'm telling you. Anyway, one thing we've been aware of over the lockdown period is the amount of folk who have taken to swimming basically outdoors, in rivers or in the sea. And you know, this is something that you're really a big fan of, Helen.
Well, I've always liked to go into this river in the summertime, but it was, you know, that chap, Philip Hoare,
yes,
that we spoke to, the outdoor swimming guy, he really persuaded me that actually I should be doing this more regularly because he goes into the sea every single day of his life. So I started off in the river here. I've actually progressed to the sea now, because would you consider going in that right now?
Nope.
Not unless I had a burning desire to see Holland quickly, no.
No, well, I'm not going in it at the moment, but I do remember the heady days of summer when I did submerge myself in that water. When I conceived the idea of recording a wild swimming piece for this programme, I was enjoying an idyllic summer break on the Black Isle, where every day was a swimming day.
I tried to float, but it didn't really work out, but it kind of worked out, and then I got to pick up some of the squelchy stuff, because when the tide was in all the way, my brother could get squelchy stuff and throw it at me, but I couldn't.
We had to take our sandals off because we were at risk of getting stuck, but when you went in bare feet, it was really good.
And quite unlike any feeling I've had before. It was like slime, which you would think would be really unpleasant, but there was something pleasant about having it between your toes.
Yeah, it felt quite soothing, actually.
I had a really good time, and then I spent there for a while, and then I got really warm, and then I felt like I don't want to go out, but we're going to go back to our friend's house. And it felt really sad because I wanted to stay inside because it was really nice.
Just floating on the gentle lapping waves of the Beauly Firth with your arms outstretched, staring up at the clouds. Back at home, everything changed because of this. And the prospect of swimming in our local river didn't seem quite so appealing. With the best of intentions, I came down to the riverbank a couple of days ago after the storm, and that was the day when it was really, really hot, bizarrely hot after that big storm. And I thought, it's warm, I'll jump in and have a swim. Took one look at the river and thought, I'm not going anywhere near that because it was high and very, very fast. A day later, and actually it's amazing how quickly the level can change. It's almost gone down to normal, but the colour, it's very, very peaty, and it's almost a ginger, actually, when I look at that water. The pace has slowed since yesterday, thankfully. Not quite the hot, sunshiny day that I would normally embrace the waters of the River Dee, but for the sake of my art, I'm going to do it. Oh, it's not as bad as I thought, actually. And the further in I go, the darker the water appears. Reaching knees now. It's always the certain parts of the body where it reaches. I'm not going to go into any more detail, and that's the key point. The question is, do you take the quick plunge or do you ease yourself in slowly? There is definitely a softness to this water, and I always like to think that it's something to do with its journey from the Cairngorm Mountains. And by entering the river, I'm embracing the spirit of the mountains. That's the little child. I think she's a bit concerned. There we go. Actually, I can feel my skin is tingling, but in the nicest possible way, and I never ever regret going into the water. But I just have to do one more thing because I haven't fulfilled the full task of a river swim, which is you haven't done a proper wild swim unless you put your head under the water. Surprisingly refreshing.
Ellen Needham there, having a dook in a considerably warmer River Dee than it would be currently.
And considerably slower and with not so much water in it.
Yeah. See, when I was a kid, we used to go caravanning holidays to Bankery. But I used to actually go into the river. I had a, you remember the old rubber diving masks?
Yeah.
And it was just an oval. There was no sort of attempt to sort of fit your nose into it or anything. One of those masks, I spent hours in the river just watching salmon and sea trout and things like that, you know, because you could kind of hang on to a boulder and just watch the fish tuck in behind. It was fascinating.
Yeah. The water seemed warmer in these days.
What I love is the fact that you used to go on holiday to Bankery.
Oh, it wasn't just Bankery. Sometimes we went to Afford. There was no holding us, you know.
You see, our whole perception of where to go on holidays has changed again,
massively,
hasn't it?
Absolutely massive.
Yeah, I was digging out some photographs a couple of weeks back, and there's a wonderful one of me, but in Melrose. Yeah, and that's where everybody went. Yeah. It was great. And also, this is apropos of nothing. In the caravan, though, and I remember this vividly, I would be about three. Caravan next to us was a Danish couple with Danish kids. And at the end of us, they gave us these carved wooden Danish horses, you know, the red and the white and the gold, which I still have somewhere. It was a really vivid Christmas memory.
Now, that's a lovely thing to do, actually. You'd made new friends when you went on holiday into a caravan, and it was just exciting and it was different. And, you know, lying in the caravan, listening to the rain on the roof or the sound of the gas. You know, remember the sort of the old lamps in the caravan were sort of gas-powered.
Coming up, we're still very much in a Norse frame of mind, with festive traditions, food, and even some singing.
Yeah, it's Boxing Day on the Scotland Outdoors podcast. Join us as our celebrations take on a distinctly Nordic theme.
Yeah, we're having a socially distanced bonfire in an attempt to embrace the joy of being in the outdoors, which is known in Norwegian
as Friluftsliv,
the joy of being outdoors. Now, we're not live today, but you can always email us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. The dark's just falling, and I've just seen behind us, we've got a bit of a murmuration going on in the pine trees there with the rooks. You know, that twisting and turning like a shoal of fish.
Yeah.
And apparently, some of the rookeries up in the northeast of Scotland are, in this part of Aberdeenshire, are the best murmurations you'll see in Europe.
There's a good chance that they might come down here because they often roost here in these trees, and I watch them quite a lot. They sort of swirl around the whole bit here, and they sometimes go and roost up there, and then sometimes they come down here and they think, no, I'll stop here, and then they go, no, we'll go over here. They change their mind. It takes them quite some time to actually decide where they're going to roost for the night.
A dither of rooks.
Indeed.
That's more like it. Yeah, a dither of rooks, yeah. Fair to say that everybody on this team likes the grub, and we like it even better when we're actually eating said grub out of doors. So we turn to Norway again to get some inspiration for our wintertime snack. We've got the makings here, but before we actually get started on that, here's Siri Melland again.
Maybe you can make cinnamon rolls on the bonfire. Ooh. And that's pretty easy to do.
Uh-huh.
Because in Norway we buy this pre-made pizza, raw pizza dough, that has been rolled out, so it's flat. And we spread out a lot of butter and cinnamon and sugar and roll it together like a Swiss roll. Then when we have the Swiss roll, you slice it, and you have a pan who you can put on the bonfire, and you put in butter, and you put in the slices of the cinnamon rolls, and you put it on low heat, not in the middle of the fire, but a little bit outside. And you let it stay there for about 7-8 minutes, and you flip it, and you do the same. And it's delicious, and it tastes wonderful.
I have a recipe for a Norwegian drink. I'm probably mispronouncing this. Gløgg?
Yes, Gløgg. Yeah. It's the Norwegian glue wine.
Oh, I tell you. See, if you were driving home and you ran out of petrol. If you've got a vacuum flask of Gløgg, you're going to get there. You're going to go faster than you think. It's powerful.
Yeah, it depends what you put in. But I love it. It's really good. But you can also make it from apple juice, you know. But when you have the red Gløgg, you need to have raisins and almonds in it.
Siri Melland there, and as if by magic, we have before us, albeit going incredibly slowly, our very own cinnamon rolls and Gløgg, non-alcoholic Gløgg.
It's very nice. It's very sweet. It's lovely warm, the cinnamon rolls. So did you follow the recipe?
I followed the recipe, as imparted to me by Siri. Basically got some homemade pizza dough. But I have to say, our producer Fiona had exactly the same idea. And she made cinnamon rolls that actually look like cinnamon rolls, whereas mine
look like pizzas.
Mine look like pizzas.
And they are currently on the fire, actually.
Yeah. Tell me, that head torch that you've got on at the moment, is it linked to your heart rate? Which, because you're seriously unwell.
Well,
you're flashing very slowly.
The problem I'm having is I've switched it off. Because every time I put my glasses on, it steams up because of the heat from the light.
And I think it's like wearing a mask, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think the battery's going as well.
During this year, simple pleasures have taken on more significance. For some, that's meant reconnecting with nature and green spaces. Journalist and broadcaster Paul English and his big sister, Wendy, frequently meet up at Pollock Park in Glasgow. And Paul and Wendy recorded this for us in the summer.
Hello again.
Hello, how are you?
All right. Shall we go and look and see what we can see?
Mm-hmm.
How many visits do you think you've made here now?
How many days have we been in lockdown?
Too many. Four months. May up March.
High double figures, because certainly at the start of lockdown, the first few months, I was here every day, sometimes twice a day, sometimes for 6 hours in the day, later on when you were allowed out longer.
So this is a place you took me to maybe about week six or seven in Pollock Park, and it's down by the mountain bike trails, which, to be quite honest, I'd never really paid that much attention to. I always just come into Pollock Park on my bike and sort of whizzed around the perimeter, but this is absolutely brilliant. Even as we're down here tonight, there's kids down taking in the tracks.
Yep.
But this was a spot that you took me to because...
I became a bit of a part of a bird watching fraternity in the park during lockdown, and while I was at the site of a woodpecker nest, a guy appeared with a large lens to tell me I was at a woodpecker nest, and I told him it fledged, and he said to me, "Have you seen the buzzards?" And I was very excited, and he described where the buzzards were, and I promptly headed down there with a friend, a new friend that I've made in the woods during lockdown, who was a fellow bird watcher, and we watched these buzzards chicks basically grow from grey, fluffy, scraggy looking things to beautiful brown full feathered grown buzzards in the middle of a city park.
In the middle of the park. You took me to that. I've been down maybe about six or seven times since then, and last week I came down and both the buzzards, well, certainly one of the buzzards was on the nest, but it was out on a limb as well, and it was actually, we thought we saw it fledging because it took flight and, you know, flew around, and then, but then it came back to the nest. You were telling me that that's something that they do.
Well, what you'll get is once they fled, they will be around the adults for another 6 weeks, but they'll only have a range in the park of you know, not a huge range, so yeah. they will be within this range, and just further over from that, from the nest that we have been watching them on, there are a couple of other nests. And sometimes they'll come back to the same nest every year, but sometimes they do change. So one of these other nests that's close by could have been last year's nest.
All right. Well, and so it's a case of look out next year then.
Yeah, definitely. They might come back to the same nest, or they might use one of these other nest sites, because I don't imagine there's another pair in such close proximity, because they'll have their own range in the woods.
One of the great things, it's not only been a discovery for me to see this buzzard's nest, which we're now looking at, and there doesn't appear to be any buzzards on, but
that would be right.
Also seeing the activity that's going on off the beaten track in the woods. I mean, there's now about four or five people down here on the cycle track, and I think that's been one of the discoveries for me, is actually seeing this place kind of with new eyes, and it's been on both your doorstep and my doorstep for, well, 20 years.
Yeah, it's a place I always came to do my exercise, but during lockdown, because I didn't have any urge or rush or any pressure work-wise or socially, I could just come into the park and be and indulge myself in what was already a favourite pastime of bird watching. But
well, you saw a whole lot, didn't you? It wasn't just the buzzards and the wood. I saw a woodpecker here one night, didn't hear it, but saw it, and it was amazing because we stood and watched it for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You saw all sorts.
Yeah. I became kind of known as a person that could take you on a bird safari at one point. I brought several people here to see these buzzards, but right at the height of spring, found lots of blue tit nests, great tit nests, woodpeckers, nuthatches, which obviously I've always been here, but I've never had the time or just really was in that headspace to sit and think it's spring. And also the lack of traffic. Once you got used to listening for calling chicks, then you heard it all the time. And I found especially blue tits and great tits nesting in all sorts of strange places, in the walls of Pollock House, and in a fence post, a metal hollow fence post, and it was really wonderful.
I felt it became quite a sanctuary to me. It was kind of like a safe harbour, but it's rooted right in the middle of the city. And where I'm going to push on to after this is, I discovered a little route out of here that takes you onto the National Cycle Network, and that loops you out into a 60-kilometre route, which can take you all the way out into the middle of Lanarkshire. You're tracking motorways, you're going through the kind of urban sprawl, but you're in the undergrowth and you're out in the countryside, and it's right here in the city.
Yeah, I think I met a lot of people, a bit like myself, during lockdown, who veered off of the main paths in Pollock Park to probably primarily get away from other people and try and be socially distanced. But in doing so, you know, my knowledge of my bird calls and wildflowers and trees is very much better than it was at the start. And I've also now met lots of people that often you might be out doing your walk at the same time as other people. So you made new acquaintances in the park who were very much seeking solace the same way that you were in the greenery, not just around the paths, but actually in the woodland.
And you can hear the roar of the traffic. I mean, there is a motorway at the other side of this park and there are some pretty major kind of, you know, arterial roads, but you couldn't hear that at certain points. It was really silent.
Yeah, right at the start, in the first week of lockdown, that was very, very apparent, very apparent. And also when I started to use the golf course to walk on and like kind of exercise on the golf course and then come and sit in the woods, the absence of the noise of traffic was really quite marked at the start, but you did hear it creep up.
And you taught me the difference between a willow warbler and a chiff-chaff.
Indeed, and you can now spot a few birds yourself. And that was the main kind of bonding over the new friend that I made in the woods. She wasn't really very up on her bird call at all, so I was kind of her living encyclopedia of bird song.
Yeah.
And I'm by no means an expert, but I'm very much better than your average person who might just say, there's a bird.
Yeah.
So, and it's been a real joy, I have to say, and it's been lovely to share it with other people as well.
Forest bathing.
Indeed, forest bathing. But you know what? We've always loved it, and it's because it's really where we come from, really, isn't it? We didn't evolve in concrete boxes. We evolved in moorland and woodland and seaside. And I mean, it's such a great park, and really, you can, apart if you can zone out the noise of the traffic. You really do get the feeling of being, you know, in the woods,
yeah.
in the deep dark woods.
Journalist and broadcaster Paul English and his sister Wendy in Pollock Park, Glasgow. One of the things I really liked about that is this business of actually just making friends.
Yeah, and bird watching's like that. Especially, I think it's spreading to the rest of Scotland, but if you're in Mull or Skye and you're driving along, and it's a clever trick if you want to do it, pull into the side of the road and start looking up to the mountains. And I guarantee you, in 5 minutes, you'll be joined by people who want to be your friend and see where the golden eagle is.
See where the golden eagle is, yeah. Or, more likely, people who actually join you, because this has happened to me a couple of times, people who join you and say, yeah, it's not an eagle, it's a buzzard. People think it's an eagle, but it's a buzzard. And quite nice too, Helen, about, you know, Wendy passing on our knowledge to other, you know, like, well, even if it's just to his, you know, to her brother, but, you know, obviously to a wider circle.
Yeah, exactly. It's just spreading the love, isn't it? And just that thing about observing what's going on around you.
Anyway, you're listening to Out of Doors here on BBC Radio Scotland. I'm Mark Stephen. He's Ewan McAvoy. She's Helen Needham. If you miss any of this, there are a few ways of listening again.
You can catch up whenever you like by looking up the programme on BBC Sounds.
Or download the Free Scotland Outdoors podcast, which is available from BBC Sounds. We do like hearing where you listen to this. You can email us your stories at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. And to be honest, we've really been sort of blown away by the amount of emails we've had over the past year. We read them all, and we're very glad to hear that our programme and our podcast has helped you get through some of the tougher parts of the year. Just recently, Renata Namath emailed us from Athens to say, I'm listening to your broadcast in Greece in my tiny but sunny apartment in the centre of the city, pretty far from nature, unfortunately. Sometimes I can hear the small geckos living in the walls of the old condominium building or see the bats flying between houses after sunset.
She goes on to say, I'm Hungarian. I grew up in Hungary in a town where three rivers meet and I've always had a close connection to nature. I planned my very first journey to Scotland for October and started listening to BBC Scotland and various podcasts to learn more about nature and history.
My vacation was cancelled, but I keep listening to Scotland Outdoors. It gives me great comfort and joy in this weird new world of the pandemic. The very first episode I've listened to was about St Kilda. I'd never heard of the island before, and I was so moved from all that beauty that I cried, and I wish I was there with you, spotting the basking sharks from the boat and seeing the fulmars on the hill. I admire your passion towards nature. Thank you so much for making these amazing podcasts. Oh, goodness me, that's
lovely,
isn't it? Made someone cry.
Nice.
Well, it's something we've specialised in over the years, of the programme that makes you greet. All these poor folk, Scottish exiles going, oh, I miss it, oh no.
Coming up later today on Boxing Day on Radio Scotland, you can join Gary Innes with a festive session from Nicol McLaren and the Glen Craig Scottish Dance Band on Take the Floor. Let's face it, that's going to be perfect music for dancing around the kitchen to work off the turkey.
Obviously, socially distanced. and small groups of family.
But yes, exactly.
Charming nonetheless. And coming up here on Outdoors, we're digging into Norwegian festive delicacies. Get this, there's even a marzipan pig.
Lockdown, I think it's fair to say, gave you and I, Ewan, the opportunity to explore our own patches in more depth.
Yeah, it was great, and neither of us were away from our houses terribly much, and I took the opportunity to dig out the electric bike, charge it up, and I had an absolute perfect day to go and find a bit more about King Edward in Bamshire and its surroundings.
So I'm going along possibly one of the most attractive cycle roads in the country. This is the Devonside Road that connects Turriff to Banff. The River Devon, one of the best salmon rivers in Scotland. A bit more on that later. But the reason I've stopped now is there's a really strange bridge that goes over the Devon. It's known locally as the Rainbow Bridge because it's a rainbow shape. It's not a road bridge. There's a gate across it to stop people going over. And there's a pipe, a big pipe going over. And what that was that in the 70s, there was a real plan to build a nuclear power station at White Hills, just to the west of Banff. It never actually happened. There was a lot of opposition to it, but an awful lot of people wanted it because of the jobs. The local hotel, the Banff Springs Hotel, was built to house the workers at the power station. And what the Rainbow Bridge is, it takes water from the reservoir in Turriff, and it was intended to supply the nuclear power station. There's only one pipe on it now. There was supposed to be two. So it was going to happen. And it's one of those things people regularly ask, what's that bridge about? Well, the Rainbow Bridge was for a nuclear power station. I've just come over a delightful bridge at Mill of Eden. The sun is just getting higher and it's getting warmer and warmer. There's a grey wagtail just having an absolute ball in the wee burn below me. It's just such a delightful spot. And this is one of the tributaries of the Devon, as I said earlier, one of the best salmon rivers in Scotland. And it also holds the record for the biggest salmon ever taken on a fly. It was in October 1924, almost at the end of the season, when Mrs. Clementina Tiny Morrison felt the line go really taut. And as it came in, she saw it get bigger and bigger. And she was so excited, she didn't want to lose it. So she leapt into the bank, stuffed both hands into the gills, and hauled this monster onto the bank. And it was so big, when they held it up beside her, it's almost the same size as she is. They needed a horse and cart to get it back. And then they had it smoked and given to all the families round about, and it fed many people for days, all due to a fly called the brown wing killer. Certainly a killer that day, but imagine the excitement. You know, that record has never been beaten since 1924. Well, I've just arrived at Castle Eden, and I'm paying particular attention to the temperature here, as you'll find out in a minute. It's a 16th century Z-shaped castle. It's a real ruin now, but it's got a really impressive outlook over the River Devon. Quite an impressive structure. But the reason I'm looking at the temperature is because there's a story about this castle that goes way back. There was a young boy caught poaching in the river below me, and he was brought before the laird, the owner of the castle, who found him guilty and sentenced him to be thrown into a pool they call the Pot, deep, deep part of the River Devon, with stones tied round his feet and thrown in as a punishment and a deterrent. And as his mother watched her son being thrown into the river, she put a curse on this place. She said, "Cold blow the wind o'er the house of Eden. Cold blow the wind over the House of Eden. And it's said that this place is always colder than the surrounding countryside. Bit of imagination. Yeah, it's a wee bit cooler. Certainly a lot windier. And it's a good story. Well, I've now come away from the main road to a delightful little church. If anybody knows King Edward Church, it's right on a crossroads, halfway between the town of Banff and Turriff. And a lot of people get confused about the name King Edward. Many thought it's named after King Edward or the famous potato, but it's not. It's actually, sorry, I'm a bit breathless. It's actually a derivation of the old word kin, meaning headland, and edder, meaning between. So it's the place between two headlands. And that makes no sense up at the crossroads because it's flat. But down here, at the old church, it's on the bend of a river, traditionally, where churches would put, and there's a headland on either side of it. And there's been a church here since the 12th century. And the thing that strikes me about this church, it's tiny. I'm standing in what would have been the main aisle, and you could probably seat 20 people in it. And by contrast, the manse is right next door, and the manse is huge. It's about 10 times the size of this little church. Extraordinary. But it's lovely just to stop, drink in the peace and the solitude. And then I've got about a quarter of a mile up a steep hill till I get home. It has been a delightful cycle.
Ewan scooting around the roads of Bamshire on his electric bike. And stay tuned for my wander up Benachie in the Dark, which is coming up soon.
And the positive thing in all this sea of horribleness is it's forced us to a certain extent to appreciate what you've got. It's just great to take the time. It slows you down. Yeah. Look at the trees, look at the birds, instead of rushing all the time.
I know an awful lot of folk found it difficult, and I can really sympathise with that, but there was something about the fact that the roads were empty, and it was quiet, and you could hear everything. It was just lovely. How are those cinnamon rolls coming on, Madeline?
There is something happening here.
Oh?
Browning up quite nicely. I think just because we've given them a bit of time, so I'm just turn them over.
Uh-huh. What do they look like?
I think they're looking pretty good. They look a bit like bannocks.
Well, yes. Aye. Scottish cinnamon rolls. That's what we've invented.
Exactly.
Here.
So I've just turned them. I'm just going to put them back on the grill for
really
a bit longer.
Cooked, are they, with your school of cuisine, till they're black and charred?
Well, that's dead. And that is my approach, I grant you, when it comes to the bacon rolls on a Saturday morning. But cinnamon rolls, I think we might have to take a middle course. Let's find out what else is on a Norwegian festive seasonal menu. We heard earlier from Kirsty Dinnes of the Norwegian Scottish Association that it's really Christmas Eve for them, which is the big celebration day. And food-wise, by the sound of it, things get off to a right hearty start.
Quite often you might have a kind of rice pudding or rice porridge, as we'd call it, and in the porridge is hidden an almond, and the person who gets the almond will get a marzipan pig.
See, that's interesting, because I brought back a marzipan pig from Norway years ago without knowing what the significance of it was. Is there a name for that rice pudding dish?
Risengrynsgrøt.
Risengrynsgrøt.
Rice grain porridge. rice and milk, and you put a bit of sugar and cinnamon, and in the middle you have what we call a butter eye, a little lump of butter in the middle. So it's very nice. But I think it probably was so that the children would eat a lot of the porridge before they go out.
Kirsty Dinnes there, and yet again, by the magic of radio, we have before us steaming hot bowls of our very own Risengrynsgrøt, rice grain porridge. Who's going to get the almond?
This is Laura that's put this together. This is the one I was nervous about.
Why?
When I was listening, when we were making that recording, I'm going, yeah,
Well, it looks like rice pudding. It looks fantastic.
You're getting it out of the flask, and that's quite a good thing.
Have a listen to this.
Thud. Can I have a slice?
Right, I'm going to
give that a go. Oh, blimey. This is really good, actually. I like the Risgrinsgrot. No, Risgrinsgrot. There you go. I'll get there eventually.
Does it remind you of being a child? I haven't tried it yet, but rice pudding makes me think of being a child.
See, I love rice pudding. Love rice pudding. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I like that. You know?
So we
I
had.
Like the glug. I like the Risgrinsgrot.
How about the like a very happy Christmas boy.
I am a very happy Christmas boy. I'm easy pleased. You know that? Who actually got the almond in the Risgrinsgrot?
Not me.
I did.
What did you say?
I didn't realise it was significant. I just thought, that tastes quite good, because I really like almonds.
Does that mean you get good luck for the rest of the year, given the fact that you were unaware of its significance? That probably negates it.
No, I'm
you
sure...
You were that close. You were that close. You've
sure
just been paying attention.
I'm sure it means I get extra special good luck, because I wasn't anticipating it.
Yeah, I reckon. What do you reckon of the cinnamon rolls?
Pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty savoury. They're nice. Yeah. They're not raw.
You could do a savoury roll, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could leave the cinnamon out and put the bacon in.
Now, apparently because I got the almond, I now have the marzipan pig.
Ah.
And we actually have a marzipan pig.
Bright pink, from what I can see by head torch.
I think Laura might have made this with her own fair hand. She did.
Seriously?
This is commitment to the cause.
Wow.
Amazing.
And she coloured it with chilli powder.
Anyway, Nicola Meehan is one of the presenters of BBC Radio Scotland's afternoon show, and we asked her if she would mind sharing her favourite walk with us, so she took her husband John along with her.
Now, we have come up the Abbey Craig via Causeway Head Park, but we have stopped to catch our breaths because there's quite a few stairs on the way up there,
isn't
there?
There's quite a lot of stairs. I'd never been up that way before, and I can see the reason why that's true.
It absolutely blows my mind that in the... How many years have I known you? 14, 15, 16, 17, 18? I think it's about that. Closer to 20.
Yeah.
I've never taken you up that way.
No.
It's very interesting. So I grew up in Causeway Head, which is the village at the foot of the Wallace Monument. And I have no idea how many times I have climbed those steps. Always exhausting. And always absolutely worth it. Now, I'm not talking about the steps in the actual Wallace Monument. Just talking about the old crumbly steps that take us into this utterly gorgeous woodland, the Abbey Craig. Now, at this juncture, I'm going to say something about the way we walk.
Okay.
So we both walk daily.
Yeah.
We have been walking throughout lockdown.
We have.
And it's occurred to me that we walk in very different ways.
In what sense?
I'm a very sort of passive walker, okay?
Right.
I can walk up the hills, or I'll walk up the Abbey Craig, and I live in my memories, or I listen to music, and I daydream.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you're paying attention to nature. You're an archaeologist, so you're reading the landscape. And tell me what you've been doing with birds of the flying kind over lockdown.
I realised I was seeing an awful lot more species than I would normally see on my daily jaunt. So I decided that I would actually start logging what I was seeing and create a spreadsheet because I'm an archaeologist.
Everything needs to be recorded.
Everything needs to be recorded, yeah.
So how many species of birds have you seen in the wider kind of Stirling, so Causeway Head, Bridge of Allen area, over the last 3 months?
I think there's a possible total of something like 104, 105 species that are known to be in this area this time of year. I haven't seen that many, but I'm into the low 60s now, so I've seen quite a few.
And counting.
And counting.
Who knows what we'll see today. Now, the Abbey Craig has been interesting over lockdown. I've spoken to quite a few people, friends, who have been up here and have come very, very close to deer and animals that would otherwise maybe usually be a little bit more shy. But it's much quieter up here at the moment. This is usually a huge tourist attraction, busloads of tourists up to the monument
Indeed.
Itself.
Yep.
But what other animals would we see? This is where I get passive again. I ask you questions. What kind of a bird is that? That's lovely. And then go off in a reverie about, oh, I remember when... Uh-huh. Well, we got married
when
up
I was
here
a
as
kid.
Well.
We did get married up here.
Just remembered that, for example. Yeah, what birds might we see up the Abbey Craig or here?
As we were talking there, we just went past a pair of bullfinches, so which was very nice to see. And we'll probably see lots of kind of woodland birds because we're surrounded by woodland here.
We are indeed. So we're kind of, as you can probably hear by our breathing, we're still walking uphill. We're going to keep wandering. We're going to go up to the kind of top of the Abbey Craig, so on which the Wallace Monument is perched. There's some brilliant cliffs up there. I used to recreate Bon Jovi's Blaze of Glory video on those. Less said about that, the better, thank goodness. It's before the days of camera phones.
Yeah.
But also it has some stunning views. We've just made it to the top. What's that I can hear?
A bird.
The science is meticulous.
I know. Unfortunately, bird song's not one of my strong suits.
You've also dragged me gently over to a rock formation, which you've been marvelling at. What's this?
Well, we are literally on the top of a volcanic plug. And as you can see, you've got these sort of large, very large rocks, way taller than me.
Yeah.
Rocks on end, sticking out of the ground.
It's like a kind of craggy Mount Rushmore vibe we've got going on.
It
here,
really
isn't it?
Is. I'm seriously wondering how it's managed to be created in such a form naturally.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it might not be natural, it might be man-made,
okay,
deposited or human-made deposited.
I'll take a
structures.
Picture. I'll take a picture. We'll study it later. Right, let's go along to the to not so much the summit, but just along from the sort of platform on which the Wallace Monument stands. Is one of my favourite views, probably my favourite view, actually, in the entire world. And, as you know, I lived in London for years, and I was hugely homesick the whole time that I was there, which is why I eventually moved home. And if I could put into words the thing that made me unhappy the most about being there, that doesn't sound too melodramatic, it's that I couldn't see any distance. I could not see in front of me. There were buildings and people everywhere. And every Saturday, if I wasn't somewhere in the world touring with some rock and roll band or other, I'd get the first train up from London. I'd be in Stirling by about 11:30. And by 12 o'clock, before I'd seen anyone or done anything else, I'd be right here. I've just arrived at it. There's even a little bench.
Some kind of amazing view too.
It's an absolutely glorious view. We're almost directly opposite the castle.
Yep.
And in between, I suppose we have something that's hugely picturesque, but also I guess it's what it means to people as well. I can see my primary school, Riverside. I can see where my old high school was, Wallace High.
Yep.
All the houses I ever lived in when I grew up. But also, I can see in front of me. What a distance.
Presenter of the Friday afternoon show here on BBC Radio Scotland, Nicola Meehan, and her husband John, who is smart enough on the subject of birds to create a spreadsheet, but struggles a bit with the bird song. And I think I would sympathise with that.
But there was a good point there when she was talking about the fact when she was working in London and how she was had the yearn for Stirlingshire, I think it is where she is. And there's quite a lot of that going on at the moment, I hear, that actually, particularly over the festive season, that particularly young people have decided that they're just going to move home.
Yeah, see how good it is.
Yeah, because they don't want to be stuck in their flat on their own anywhere in a city.
No, I can well understand that.
I think if people we are naturally community-minded animals, aren't we?
Yeah, sociable.
We want to share, we want to connect with each other, so we just find inventive ways of doing it in such conditions.
Indeed. Well, we are now officially in full darkness at our Riverside camp. We've got the glow of the fire and head torches, intermittent in Ewan's case, to provide light. Now, for some of us, this might be the year when we've decided to embrace the outdoors and the darkness as a way of letting us still to be able to meet up. I asked Siri Melland if darkness put paid to getting outside or indeed socialising in Norway.
Darkness matters. we are less active during the cold period in December and January than we are in the more warmer seasons, of course. And now we are more out than we have ever been before. So we see that on Strava, and we see it on Google data. We are more outside, and we go into the woods, longer into the woods than we usually do. So some places increased with over 2,000%.
Wow.
So it's a lot of people are now experienced to go outside.
Hey, you've got a hut, Siri. Hey, would you spend time in that at Christmas, or is that just for summer months?
My cottage is a summer cottage, but I'm going to the mountains in the New Year's Eve. So I'm going up before the 29th and staying there until the 2nd of January. And then it's up in the mountains to do cross-country skiing and downhill skiing for me.
Mm. Have you got any snow at the moment?
Yes, we have snow. We have where I'm going, it's over a meter now, and we can also go skiing from Oslo. So if I take the tram 20 minutes, I can go skiing now in Oslo.
Do you get that belt from snow? We were talking about this the other day because we've had incessant rain and drizzle for weeks now, and it's depressing, and we were longing for snow. Do you get that lightening of the spirits when the snow arrives?
Yes, because now it's dark when you are at work, and it's dark when you are finished at work. And when the snow comes, it makes things so much lighter. It's you can do so much more. As it's and really enlightens me when it's I feel mentally more happy when the snow is coming. Yeah,
it's an odd thing, snow, because it makes it, you know, it sounds odd, but it makes the world clean. And it kind of cleans out your head at the same time. It sort of declutters everything. It's nice.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. It's the white, when it's all white, and it's beautiful when you go skiing and you don't have any tracks in front of you, and you have this open open land, and you just your marks, and you feel so, yeah, you feel so clean, and you feel so happy. I feel really happy when I have that I had that sight and do that. It's it's beautiful.
Siri Melland there, and that talk of snow. I wish we had snow.
Oh, I know. I think that's it. Winter just becomes so much more.
I was looking at some pictures from the Cairngorms, even down quite low level round about Aviemore, and it's gorgeous, beautiful at the moment. Lochinvar was just looking like a Christmas card. It's delightful. Mm. Sadly, we're in Aberdeenshire and we haven't got it.
No. Which, yeah, it's a, you can go out, particularly of a moonlit evening, if there's snow on the ground, etc., and you can more or less read a newspaper. It just, it reflects the light back off the ground. I mean, Siri was saying that about, you know, how much brighter the nights are when it's been snowing. As long as it's not actively snowing, obviously. And think how wonderful that would be about being able to get on a tram.
Yeah.
20 minutes later in your cross-country skiing.
Well, the more I learn about Norway, they've just somehow got it right, haven't they?
They do. That's not to say we can't change and we can't get it right in future, but we've got a bit of catching up to do, pure and simple.
I think we just lost it for a while.
Yeah.
We just kind of re-embrace it rather than looking south, look in other directions.
Look north. Look to the Arctic Circle. As the clocks turned back in October, we decided we'd look at darkness as a theme for one of our programmes. I thought it might be an idea to take a walk in the dark and find out just how different it was. Fourth year mathematics. I used to sit on the top floor of Inverurie Academy in class. And I spent hours looking at this. This is my local hill, Benahee. And although I might know remarkably little about mathematics, I know this place like the back of my hand, well, normally. But tonight, I decided to come up and do it in the dark, which might not have been that smart. Last night, there was a fabulous moon. Tonight, however, no moon, in fact, no stars either. So I've got a bit of a head torch, and I'm going to use it certainly in the initial stages, but if I start picking up any vestiges of light from the sky, however dim, I'll switch the torch off and see how I get on.
But already it feels like a very different experience. The other thing that I notice, even so far, is it's a windless night and there's not a sound. Listen to that. Obviously it's dark, so there's no birdsong, but there's nothing. There's no foxes, there's no deer barking, nothing.
Evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Thank you. Not bad, how are you, bro?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Yes. Can I just stop?
Yeah.
Huh? My name's Mark Stephen. I do a programme for BBC Radio Scotland called Out of Doors. Do you pair do this on a regular basis?
Yeah, we do. About every week, yes.
Aye. Summer and winter?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how big a difference is it doing it in the dark as opposed to in the height of summer?
It is a bit of a different feel to it. Yeah. More likely to fall on your face.
That's true.
Generally. It's just because it's got a different feel. Yeah. But then the same when it's snowing. You know, if you're up to your waist in snow as well, you get a bit of a different feel.
I was just laughing earlier, there was a lad went past me with a bike.
Yeah.
And the torch on the front of that bike.
Like a car.
I swear, you know, it just, it, for detecting Lancaster bombers. Just looks wrong.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
There's a good few of them doing the bikes up here, though. Yeah. You do see quite a lot of them.
I have to say, I assumed, given the time of night and it was dark and what have you, I would be up here by myself. It's like Piccadilly Circus.
It is, there's a lot of people.
It is quite busy.
No, it's good.
Tend to be.
But
it depends on the weather. Tonight's a good night.
In the office or at home working, it's good to get some fresh air in the evening, you know.
Good. You ever see any wildlife?
Oh, yes. Aye, you see the deer. I've had the deer jump out in this a few times, yeah.
Yeah, give you a flag.
Yeah.
Especially the rise in the dark, absolutely.
Oh, listen, I'm glad I met you. What's your name, by the way?
It's Colin.
Colin. Yeah.
And Kevin.
Colin and Kevin. Like nice to meet you.
Okay.
Thanks very much for speaking to me. Cheers, take care. Bye-bye. I'm heading up towards Mither Tap. And I said, you climb out the trees. And then there's some rock pavement. And then it levels out. And you're kind of walking level for a wee while. And that's where I am at the moment. Towns and villages can disappear into this landscape during the day. You know, it's low rolling hills. There is some forestry down there. So sometimes you get obscured, but of course at this time of night, everything is just beaconing its existence. See several transmitter masts. You know, the red lights standing up. I see Kemnay, Kintore, Inverurie, Old Meldrum. Whew. It's bonny. That's actually beautiful. I'm at the burn on the halfway mark up towards Mither Tap. And just, I've got the head torch back on full again, and just shining the beam into the water, and the water is sort of peaty, tea-coloured and very, very clear aside from that. And you can hear where it sort of burbles down. And the colours are just glorious. They're autumnal colours. You've got golds and creams and fawns and coppers and reds. It's just the stones inside the burn. Although the heather's looking a bit tired, there's moss growing just above the water level of the brightest viridian green. It's really quite eye-catching. That's me at the top. I switched this torch off completely. Whew. If I look to the east, lots and lots of street lights, sodium orange, white. Even at this time of night, Aberdeenshire's busy. But if I turn in the opposite direction, all I can see are silhouettes. Just the shapes of the hills that I know are there. You know that old saying, distance lends enchantment? Well, so does darkness. I said, I know this place like the back of my hand. And it feels completely different at night time. It's a real pleasure and a privilege being up here on my Todd. And that, trust me, is sheer coincidence. Because judging by the lights around me, there's quite a few walkers and there's umpteen mountain bikers. I've just hit lucky. I'm going to head back down before the rain gets too bad. And yes, I think I will put the torch on this time. That's better.
And I'm pleased to say I managed to make that journey up and down Benachie without actually falling over, which is unusual for me. I don't usually manage that to do in the daytime.
Surprised how many folk you met up there, though.
It was weird. It was really, really strange. Because you kind of looked up the hill and you could see all these head torches moving about. And I was trying not to use a head torch most of the time. And the mountain bikers, because the torches they've got, I mean, seriously, those are for bringing down Lancaster bombers. They're unbelievable, these things nowadays.
And perfect place for a Boxing Day walk. Absolutely heaving most years.
Indeed. As you know, we're big on folklore and traditions on this programme, and Ewan is our resident expert at providing us with that. But we thought we'd ask Kirsty Dinnis what Norwegian tradition she thought we could all do here in Scotland over the festive season.
Well, I think you know that there's a lot of singing in the house. You know, they have the carol singing at the school, but I think very few families do singing around the Christmas tree because our lot, you know, even if they're quite big, they want to do it, dancing around the Christmas tree. And there's some, you know, with actions in them, some of them turning around and clapping, and there's one about all the days, what you do, you know, you do all the washing and cleaning of the house. So go vi runt om en ene babusk. Enebabusk, enebabusk, så går vi runt om en enebabusk till en sen mandagsmorgon. Och så gör vi så när vi vasker vårt gulv, vasker vårt gulv, vasker vårt gulv. Så gör vi så när vi vasker vårt gulv till en mandagsmorgon.
We do some of that as well. You know, this is the way we wash our face on a cold and frosty morning.
That's right. Yes, exactly. That's
this is
it,
the way
yes.
We go to school, go to school,
yes,
go to school.
Exactly. And you hang up the clothes, you see, too, and then you have to jump up because the clothesline is quite high up. So anyway, and then we've got another one in the country. In olden days, they used to look out for the julenisse. So that was a little sort of elf thing, you could say, but you had to keep in with the nisse. He was there in the barn all the year round, or in the cowshed, and if anything went wrong with the animals, that was the fault of the nisse. So you had to keep in with him very much. So you used to put out porridge for him on Christmas Eve. And there are songs about Julenis, and he's eating his big porridge, and all the little mice are around looking at him jealously to see if they can sneak some food from him. På loven sitter nissen med sin julegröt, så god och söt, så god och söt. Han nickar och han smiler och han är så glad. På julegröten vill han gärna ha, men runt omkring står alla de små nisser och de. Anyway.
Is that the one about the little elf?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, excellent. That's
And there's even stories about, you know, a song about that the man wanted to move away from his elf because he was doing so much damage to his farm. And then on the top of the removal, though, there he was sitting, waving and saying, oh, we're moving today, aren't we? So we couldn't get rid of him.
The nisses of Norway, they're everywhere.
Yeah, we've got our own version here as well. You just always blame it on them. Yeah. You've got to give them cake or cinnamon buns, otherwise you'll find your tyres are flat or the horses have been let out. I think it's great to have a familiar in the house, though, that you just adds another dimension to it. You can blame it on it and it'll come and help you. It'll, if you treat it nicely, it'll do the washing up and sweep the floor.
You never know.
Every home should have one.
Well, I thought about this because in the run-up to this, I was thinking at some stage we're going to sit around the fire. It's just in the aftermath of Christmas, you know, what goes on there, etc. And, you know, we've been doing these Doric poems throughout the year, so this is one that I came up with. It's called The Christmas Fairy. I'm currying neath an auld tin pail in the midden by the byre. I'm fine and warm and toasty with a drammy and a fire. I've burnt yon gipe at nighty and trashed yon angel wings, and you'll nae catch me up a Christmas tree as lang's cock robin sings. I was born a free-range fairy on the slopes of Benachie, that all folk cry to brownie or a kinfolk of the she. I grew up beneath the heather and drank the morning dew and worked the kind of magic that the little people do. I'd mak a quiny fa' in love wi' a laddie at the squeal, or mak a farmer rue the day he swicket on a deal. His yows would aye lie coupit, his coos would aye ging dry, his tatties would be blighted, and his prize bowl up and die. See, being a Scottish fairy is nae fit maist folk think. We're nae those shilpit little craters a' dressed up in mauve or pink, blinnin' folk wi' fairy dust, needin' bairns to clap their hands, and flappin' little fairy wings to flit o'er fairy lands. Na, na. Scottish fairies are just wee chuchters, as chuch as all shoe leather. Dressed up in moleskin jackets and oot in every weather, their bricks are made of hodden grey, their caps of conker shells, and the tackety beats on their fairy feet are made of Scots bluebells. Now, you'll never see a fairy, you'll never catch a sniff, for if a human sees a fairy, the fairy fa's down stiff. Nae deed as such, just frozen, it canna blink an ee. So a fairy's gae attentive fin there's humans on the spree. Or I should have been, gowk that I am. I was caught 2 years ago, in a dwam, in the dairy, when a little human lassie cried, "Oh, look, mum, there's a fairy!" Wham! I couldn't move a muscle. Nae time to rue my folly, as our mother picked me up and said, "Oh, someone's lost their dolly." Dolly! I was black affronted. They stripped me of my nicky tams and signed out all sorts of things. Then dressed me in a nighty and gied me angel's wings. But the worst humiliation, losh, it fairly made me loup, was when they stuck a jabby Christmas tree up my tender fairy doup. 2 Christmases I've spent like that. Ah, dignity was lost. A Norman pine for the sun don't shine, my eyes watering and crossed. I'd be there yet, I'd warrant, trapped in fairy hell, if it were not for a pussycat and a ginger dug named Bell. A.D., the cart and Doug were fechting, racing round the room, when they clattered off the Christmas tree and brocht the hail thing doon. A wheen of Christmas baubles fell and shattered on the hearth, whilst I flew straight out the windy and landed in the earth. As soon as I touched the morning dew, it broke the magic spell, and I gathered up my nighty and I ran like merry hell. Now I'm safe beneath this bucket, I'll nae come out till dark. And as for a Merry Christmas, well, you can stuff that for a lark.
Just leaving a gap. Let people drink in that image of a scarred old fairy. Because Scottish fairies aren't pretty, as you know, you alluded to. They're quite big as well.
Yeah.
It's a completely different ball game from English fairies.
Totally, totally.
But just a magical thing round the fire. But you've had a go at making up folklore and stories, but that's the way it evolves. You have granddad sitting with the grandchildren at knee in a blazing fire, telling stories that make the Scottish countryside live.
Well, the vast majority of what we do is really storytelling. You know, and this goes back to the earliest form of it, where you've got a fire and the darkness and the human voice. You know, we don't have television, you know, the pictures are provided by the fire, and the story is provided by the human voice. And it works. You know, if you put, I mean, and as Siri said, you know, this concept of Freelance Leaf,
if you're properly happed up, as we have been tonight, you know, it's got dark. I'm not cold. Are you?
No, not at all. I'm right next to the fire, and I found it so atmospheric listening to your poem there because my mind was concentrated because of the darkness, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also gives you a chance to... It works two ways, 180 degrees. You look into the fire and you see the dancers and the flames and you're entertained and you look up at the great majesty of the stars, Cassiopeia suddenly appearing there.
Yeah.
And you wonder what's out there, and the fire just contributes to that whole, where are we on this earth? Where are we in this universe?
Yeah, quite. We've had a great time around the fire reminiscing about the strangest of years, and we'd really like to thank our Norwegian friends Siri and Kirsty, and to you, of course, for downloading this and listening to it. We'll be back with another podcast soon, and our next guest is field recordist and composer Jez Riley French. From all of us here, thanks for listening.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.